Hello, this is Lafayette Faust, creator of the Nevermore Hollows podcast. Thank you for making the show a success. Please take a moment to subscribe, give 5 stars, comment, and share the show with your friends. It's the best way to help us grow and to be able to continue to provide quality horror content. Also, please support our new art director, Chris Madman Goins at Black Sheep Studios TN on Instagram. He has some amazing Nevermore Hollows art for sale, signed by the both of us, as well as many other original pieces I think you're gonna love. Now, for you horror hounds who like to have a good laugh, I invite you to check out my other podcast. It's called The Three Uncool Cats. In it, my two friends and I sit in a basement and discuss music, movies, and whatever else comes into our warped minds. I would really appreciate it if you would give it a listen. Now, with that out of the way, I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. A close friend of mine recently moved to Nevermore Hollows, hoping the slower pace of a small town would bring him peace and inspiration. I told him that Nevermore's Mayberry-style charm is simply a nostalgic facade that hides a twisted and gruesome reality, and that it is a dangerous place to live. He moved here anyway, and the evil that owns this town wasted no time in trying to drag him into madness. He was warned. I am Lafayette Faust, bringing you these macabre vignettes from my secret bunker here in Nevermore Hollows, and I invite you to sit back, turn on a light, and prepare yourself. Chris Goins stood in the middle of his new art studio. It had once been a 4-stall horse barn, but had been remodeled on the inside by the last owner of the property he had just purchased. It was a single story with a full bathroom and kitchenette, literally the perfect space for an art studio. He had decided to move from Nashville, Tennessee to Nevermore Hollows 2 months ago. His realtor suggested this property, which sat 10 miles outside the town and had this amazing barn and a beautiful 100-year-old farmhouse. It sat on 5 acres, all of which butted up against Dunwich Forest. "This is perfect," he said aloud, though he was alone. "Open floor plan with lots of windows that allow in natural light. I can look out on the fields and the woods for inspiration." He had taken possession of the property at sunrise that morning and quickly moved all his belongings into the farmhouse. He was done with that by noon, and then he began setting up his new studio. Chris was a successful graphic artist who designed images for Nashville musicians and record companies. But his dream was to create a graphic novel. He got the opportunity to pitch an idea to Dark Horse Comics, and they signed him to a deal. So, he left Nashville and came to Nevermore Hollows, hoping the slower pace and rural setting would help with the inspiration. And now that his studio was ready, he was eager to get started on the character designs. It was nearly 3 p.m. He wolfed down a sandwich and an energy drink, then sat at his desk, fully inspired, or, as he liked to say, dancing with the muse. He scanned some sketches into his software and spent the afternoon bringing his characters to life. After a while, he needed a break and stepped to the oversized barn door that was designed to serve as the front entrance. It even had a pet door at the bottom, though he did not have a pet. He rolled it aside and stepped out onto a patio. The late afternoon sun painted the scene with golden highlights. Bees buzzed around brightly colored wildflowers. Butterflies flitted through shafts of light that shone through the branches of oaks that were scattered about the yard. Birds warbled and crooned in a glorious cacophony. Somewhere in the distance, a cow mooed and a dog barked. He smiled at the fact that there was not a single unnatural sound to be heard. No cars or big rigs or school buses or planes in the sky. And especially, there were no bars or honky-tonks. He thought to himself that Nashville would never be able to create music as sweet to the ear as what Mother Nature created here. Here I am, he thought. I have a new home in a new town and an opportunity to live my dream. I am literally living the life. He was 50 and single with no kids, but he wouldn't be lonely. His stepsister, Alyssa Hart, was the county coroner. She had pressed him hard to move anywhere but here, stating that while Nevermore looked like Mayberry, it was only a halcyon facade that hid a cancerous rot that infected the town. He loved her dearly, but chalked up her description of the town as hyperbole due to the fact that she often witnessed the end results of the worst of humanity. When he had stood firm on his decision to move to Nevermore, Alyssa said that she would make sure to visit and help him find women to date that were not dangerous, whatever that meant. The sun began to lower itself below the horizon, and as the shadows began to creep from the tree line of Dunwich Forest, he was seized by trepidation. He felt his skin prickle with goosebumps. The hairs on his arms and the back of his neck came alive as if they were 1,000 tiny spider legs. He glanced around the property, sure that something was sneaking up on him, ready to tear his flesh, rip his throat. But all he saw were squirrels darting through the trees, rabbits hopping across his yard, and bluebirds flying to their nests in the oaks to settle in for the night. He decided his trepidation was due to this being the first night he would sleep here, so far out from town and neighbors. But just to be sure, he stepped inside and grabbed his Glock 40 from the desk. He took a walk around the property and found no threats. The sun was fully beyond the horizon when he finished, giving over its authority to the moon. He chided himself and stepped back into the studio. He closed the door and got back to working on his character designs, becoming completely lost in the act of creating. When he finally checked the time, it was 10:30, and he was still full-on dancing with his muse. He leaned back in his chair and stretched, then wiggled his fingers, keeping the blood flowing. He leaned forward, prepared to continue the dance, when something struck one of the windows that faced the forest. He jumped up from his desk and looked over at the window. Though he knew that a full moon illuminated the night beyond, the window seemed to be a portal to a dimension devoid of light. His skin crawled. His neck hair prickled. He understood that the window looked so dark because the studio lights, though dimmed as he liked them to be when he was dancing with his muse, were still bright enough to counter any moonlight that would otherwise shine through. This was a completely rational thought, but his artist's imagination would not let him sit back down until he ascertained that there was, in fact, a world beyond that black portal. He stepped to the window, but saw only an ephemeral reflection of himself in the dark glass. He leaned close, cupping his hands around his eyes, and peered through. He was able to see a few feet beyond. He stood there, letting his eyes adjust. He was able to make out the shadow of a woodpile sitting about 10 yards away. Beyond that, nothing. The hairs on the back of his neck continued to tingle. Life had taught him to trust his instincts, and at this moment, his gut told him that danger was near. Suddenly, something pale and lanky screamed and ran by the window. He jerked back, his blood running cold. There were 3 windows on this wall and 3 on the other side of the studio. At the rear of the studio, there was only the window set in the back door. The motion-activated security light flicked on, and something loped past. It seemed that whoever or whatever was out there was running around the studio. He stepped to the front door, noting that its security light had not been triggered. He quietly slid it open, shot a look to his left to ensure it was clear, and stepped onto the patio. He slid the door shut behind him. He kept his back to the wall, expecting whoever it was to round the corner to his right, though he kept glancing to his left, just in case. Because he stood under and behind the security light sensor, it was not activated. He was standing in the dark, and his heart pounded. The full moon painted the property in a ghostly glow, outlined with thick black shadows. He tried to figure out what he was up against. I only got a glimpse, but it seemed to walk upright, and I'm sure that was pale skin and not fur that I saw. It has to be a person. He decided to check the studio's perimeter. He eased over and glanced around the corner to his right. Clear. He shot around and to the back corner. Clear. He continued around until he stepped back onto the front patio, careful not to trip the security light. Strange, he thought. I know I saw something. The fact that the back light was triggered is proof. Suddenly, the sense he was in danger spiked. Then, grunting and movement to his right, he turned, gun up, finger on the trigger, a flash of white as something loped away from the building. He nearly fired, but caught himself. Damn it! He yelled. He leaned back against the door, breathing deep, trying to calm his hammering heart. A deer. A freaking deer. A wide gravel path led from the studio and connected to the concrete driveway at his house. The deer stood 10 yards away on the path facing him. Its antlers sat atop its regal head like a pagan crown, bejeweled with moon glow. The gravel faintly sparkled at its feet. The scene was so magnificent that it should have ignited his creative spirit, but it did not. Instead, the abject fear that radiated from the trembling deer countered the wondrous spell of the moment, infecting the scene with ominous foreboding. It turned and stepped from the path, paused, then looked back at Chris. It raised its head to the moon and gave a mournful cry, as if pleading for Chris to follow him away from the studio. When Chris did not follow, the deer turned and loped off into the darkness. Chris was so disturbed by this scene that he knew there would be no more dancing with the muse.
So, he decided to shut down his computer and call it a night. He stepped into the studio and closed the door. When he turned, a man was standing in the center of the room. He was dirty, with greasy shoulder-length hair and a woolly beard. He wore ratty bell-bottom jeans and a brown vest with no shirt underneath. The vest was splattered with dark stains and hung open on his skeletal frame. There was a wound in his chest, and dried blood was smeared down his abdomen. "What the hell?" Chris said, bringing his gun to bear on the man. "Who are you? What are you doing here?" The man said nothing. He stood silently, eyes closed as if meditating. Chris shot a quick glance around the studio, looking for other intruders. This room was an open floor plan, with only the bathroom to serve as a place for someone to hide. The door was open, and he could see it was empty. "Hey, you! What are you doing here?" The man remained still, but he opened his eyes. They were sick yellow with black pupils. He looked directly at Chris, but said nothing. A dark energy radiated from him. "You need to leave now," Chris said, his nerves raw. He felt the urge to run, but something told him that would be a bad idea. The man tried to speak, but it came out as a grunt, as if his mouth was filled with grave dirt. He reached up his bony hand with ragged fingernails and touched his throat. He grunted again, and a brown goo oozed from his mouth and dripped down his chin. Chris's hands began to shake. He was full-on creeped out, his instincts telling him to shoot the man now, just shoot him in the face before it was too late. But Chris's conscience told him that the man had not yet made any threatening moves. "What's your name?" The man tried to wipe the goo from his chin, but only succeeded in smearing it across his cheek.
"Frankie,"
he said, his voice thick. More of the brown goo oozed from his mouth. "You look hurt," Chris said. He saw his phone sitting out of reach on his desk and silently cursed himself for not having it on him. Frankie looked down at his chest. He fingered the wound with a dirt-crusted nail.
"I am,"
he replied, his voice grave thick.
"It stopped."
Chris shot a glance around the studio, still clear. "What stopped?" Frankie grimaced. His teeth were black. He croaked,
"My heart."
That's creepy as hell, Chris thought. The wound in Frankie's chest appeared to be a stab wound. It was ragged and black around the edges. "You need medical attention." Frankie stuck his finger in the wound and prodded around. He tried to speak, but instead coughed up a thick wad of the brown goo. He wiped it away with his other hand. When he spoke, his voice was still corpse dry, but much clearer.
"Why doesn't it hurt?" he asked.
Chris took a cautious step toward his phone on the desk, not wanting to make any quick moves. Frankie seemed not to notice. Instead, he pulled his filthy finger out of the wound and held it up to his face and scrutinized the black blood that covered the jagged nail. His expression was one of confused wonder.
"Am I tripping?"
He looked at Chris.
"If I am, it's a bad one."
Chris didn't want to shoot Frankie. He wanted to get the man some help. He kept the gun pointed at him and took another step toward the desk. He was only 2 steps away from the phone. I'm going to reach for my phone. Frankie ignored him and sniffed his finger. He made a face that suggested that it smelled putrid. He shook his head.
This ain't no trip, man.
He looked up at Chris. I remember now. He stabbed it. My heart.
That's why it doesn't work.
That sinister statement made Chris's skin crawl. He took another step toward the desk, now only 1 step away from the phone. Who, Frankie? Who stabbed you? Frankie wiped his finger on his dirty jeans.
The man with the horns.
We were camping in the woods. We were just vibing, man, smoking weed and dropping acid. And he just popped into existence. We thought we were tripping on the LSD, but we weren't. He was real. And he killed us. All of us. Me, Jean, Bob and Marilyn. Chris took the final step and slowly picked up his phone. I need you to stay right there. I have my phone. I'm going to use it to call for help. Frankie looked confused.
That's a phone?
Chris found that to be an odd question. Yes, it's my phone. See? I'm going to call an ambulance. Frankie locked his jaundiced eyes on Chris and said,
They won't be able to help me. But you can.
Chris didn't like that statement. He kept the gun leveled on Frankie and unlocked his phone with his facial recognition app. That's what I'm going to do right now, Frankie. I'm calling for help. Frankie shook his head.
No, man. I'm dead. My heart doesn't work. But yours does.
Frankie shot forward. His yellow eyes were wild, and his black teeth were bared. He held out his fingers with their dirt-crusted nails as if they were claws. Chris dropped the phone, grabbed the gun in a two-handed grip, and fired 3 rapid shots into Frankie's chest. The force was enough to stop Frankie in his tracks. He stumbled back, his skinny knees buckled, and he fell to the floor onto his side. Chris's hands were shaking so badly he nearly dropped the gun. There was still a dark energy crackling through the room, and he felt that he was not yet safe. He had to ensure Frankie was dead. Before he could put that thought into action, Frankie rolled over and pushed himself up into a sitting position. He looked down at the 3 new holes in his chest. They seeped more of that black blood.
You shot me, man. That's not cool.
Shit, Chris said. He backed away as Frankie stood. When he bumped against a sliding door, he had an idea. He reached behind him with his right hand and slid it open. Frankie glared at Chris.
I need your heart. I was going to make it quick, but now, because you shot me, I'm going to take my time.
Frankie rushed at Chris. At the last second, Chris dropped to the ground, causing Frankie to trip over him. He fell out onto the patio. Chris rolled up into a crouch and fired 3 more shots into Frankie's back as he tried to push himself up. Frankie was knocked forward and fell onto the grass, triggering the security lights. Chris scrambled over, pulled the door shut, and slammed the deadbolt. His heart hammered. Blood pulsed in his ears. What the hell is happening? He thought. He clearly was stabbed in the heart. And I shot him 6 times. 3 in the chest, 3 in the back. There's no way he's getting up from that. Even as he thought this, he knew he was wrong. If Frankie was already dead due to the stab wound, no amount of bullets would keep him down. His mind buzzed and his body shook with the rush of adrenaline. He strained to listen. It was quiet. Maybe it was over. Then there was a knock on the door. "Hey, man," Frankie said. "Let me in. I need your heart." Chris stood in the dim lights of the studio, trying to come to terms with the fact that he was in a full-on paranormal event. Then he remembered his phone. He needed to call for help. He dropped to his knees and searched under the desk. The phone was not there. "Shit," he said. "Where is it?" There was movement at one of the windows that faced the forest. Frankie's dirty, death-pale face was framed in the black rectangle. He pushed his forehead against the window. It left a creamy smear on the glass. He held up the phone. "Looking for this?" he said. "I'll trade you this for your heart. Just let me in." Chris wondered why Frankie didn't just smash the glass and climb through. There must be a reason why. Frankie licked the window with a thick black tongue. "Let's get our freak on." Chris was now intrigued. There has to be a reason why Frankie isn't trying to smash the glass. And it's likely a paranormal reason. He had a hunch. And, steeling himself, he walked to the window. "Yeah, man," Frankie said. "That's it. Come on over. Let's take this trip together, man." Chris stopped a foot away from Frankie's deranged face. He examined the wall and the window casing. Frankie grunted and tapped the phone on the glass. Chris ignored him, and after a moment, he found a tiny cross painted on the wall just under the window apron. Was this why Frankie wasn't smashing the window? It was the only thing that made sense. He quickly checked the under windows. They also had tiny crosses painted under them. Even the back door had a cross painted under its window. If these crosses were stopping Frankie from getting in, then how did he get into the studio earlier? Frankie checked the front sliding door. He found a tiny cross painted above the door, but it had been smeared to such a degree that the left side of the cross was missing. The spell had been broken so that Frankie was able to slide the unlocked door open and walk inside while Chris was checking the perimeter. Chris snatched a marker from his desk and reached above the door and drew another cross. Frankie groaned. "Come on, man. Don't do that. Let me in and let's get our freak on." Chris was about to yell at him to shut the hell up when he heard a car approaching. His heart lifted. He looked out onto the path that led from the house to the studio. The gravel continued to sparkle in the ghostly moonlight, and he saw the distinct headlights of a VW bus heading his way. Alyssa drove a 66 VW bus, but just as he was sure he was about to have help ending this nightmare, he realized that the bus heading his way was not Alyssa's. Hers was immaculately restored and painted white and powder blue. This one suffered from neglect in the elements. It rolled to a stop just inside the security light, giving Chris a better view. It looked as if it had been sitting in the woods for decades. Cataracts of grime blinded the windows, and large scabs of mildew infected the top and sides. It had once been painted with vivid colors, but the paint had faded, and the bus now looked as if it had driven straight out of hell. Someone had painted hippie symbols and groovy slogans all over the bus, but some of the letters had faded away, and mildew completely covered certain words, thus changing the original peaceful mantras into demonic threats. On the driver's side, the slogan, "We are free spirits who make love, not war," was transformed into, "Spirits make war." The large VW ornament on the front had been removed, and in its place was painted the grinning face of a cat. Its eyes were peace signs, and its elongated fangs were vampirish. It wore a top hat with the number 13 painted in the center, and its ears poked out on each side into sharp points that resembled horns. Above the cat's head was written, "Hello," and below its chin was, "There." But the O and the T had faded away, thus reading, "Hell here." The front doors opened and two people stepped out. The driver was a tall man. He had shoulder-length hair with beaded headband and wore a tie-dyed t-shirt and bell-bottoms. The other was a girl. She was blonde with a crown of dead daisies and wore a short paisley dress. It was difficult to tell their age because their skin was blackened with death. The side doors of the bus opened and another man stepped out. He was shorter, sported an afro, and wore white and red striped pants. He was otherwise shirtless. He, too, had the bloated and mottled skin of a dead man. Frankie tapped at the side window. "Oh, yeah, man. My friends are here now. You're about to take a long, strange trip." Chris turned from Frankie's ghoulish face and looked back out at the bus. The driver stepped forward.
"Frankie," he said, his voice guttural. "It's Gene. I have Marilyn and Bob with me. We've come for you."
Frankie still had his face pressed against the window. He gave a maniacal laugh. "I'm ready," he yelled. "It's been so long, but first, I've got a live one. He's inside the barn." Marilyn clapped her death-blackened hands together.
"Far out,"
she said, and sniffed the air.
"Oh, he smells juicy."
Let's take a quick break.
Out of the woods can the moon...
Moon Carter is a family fictional podcast, and I mean for the family. Parents, do you find it really hard to make it through your children's podcasts?
Then listen to Moon Carter and join me, Splot, and the gang on our magical adventures. Click all the links below or get it from where you get your podcast from. But if you need to be told that, then I worry about you. Splot. It's like drink water from where water's from.
Not,
what's that about?
Not helping. Moon Carter is a podcast. You like it?
She took a step further into the security light, and Chris could see a ragged gash around her neck. Gene walked to within 3 feet of the door. Chris saw there was a bullet hole in the center of his forehead.
"Yeah, man," he said. "I dig it. Let's pop this pill."
Bob stepped away from the bus and began making his way around the barn to where Frankie was standing. The back of his skull was caved in, and his afro was matted with dirt and blood. Chris's mind wanted to disconnect from this new supernatural reality and shut down, but he knew that to survive, he had to accept the new truth and adapt to it. He had to stay present, clear, engaged. Bob disappeared around the corner into the darkness. Marilyn headed around the other corner. They were encircling the studio. Jean walked up to the door and knocked.
I know this is trippy, man, but just go with the flow. Let your freak flag fly. Come be dead with us.
That ain't gonna happen, Chris said, looking through the window beside the door. He could see the exit wound in the back of Jean's head. Get back in the bus and leave. Frankie tapped at the window.
Nah, man, we ain't moving on till you join us.
Bob slammed his face hard against one of the other windows. His left eye was missing.
Come be dead.
How the hell am I going to get out of this? Chris thought. I have no phone. Bullets don't work. The only thing keeping me safe are the crosses under the windows. His mind raced through limited scenarios, landing on the small hope that they would leave when the sun came up. He had to keep them out of the studio until then.
Come and see what I can do,
Marilyn yelled from the back door.
Hurry, or you'll miss it.
Damn, Chris said. He didn't want to look, but he knew he had to. He rushed to the back door and looked out the window. Marilyn stood at the edge of the cone of security light, half in shadow. She locked eyes with him and gave her rotten tooth smile. She stuck her chin out, exposing the ragged cut around her neck. She then grabbed her temples and wrenched her head back and forth until the vertebra cracked apart. She removed her head and dropped it to the ground beside her feet. The thick, puffy body of a giant caterpillar uncurled from the ragged stump of her neck. It was putrid green and hairy. It wriggled around, riding itself onto its rows of insect legs. Marilyn's head became the caterpillar's head. As Chris watched, it scrambled around the corner, giggling into the darkness. Her headless body began to twirl with flailing arms in a demonic dance. Chris forced his gaze away from the macabre scene. His knees were weak, his spine tingled, and his blood was ice. I'm not gonna make it, he said. Then, no, that's bullshit. I'm gonna get through this. Frankie and Bob continued to smear their faces on the window panes. Frankie chuckled madly. Bob kept saying, come be dead with us. Come be dead. Jean had now moved to one of the windows on the other side of the studio. He said nothing, just stared through the window with a gruesome sneer. Chris had moved to the center of the studio. He shot a glance over to the microwave in the small kitchenette. It read a quarter till midnight. Sunrise was 6 hours away. He wasn't sure he would be sane by then. Rattling came from the front door. He looked over and saw the pet door push open and the Maryland caterpillar thing crawled through. It was even more hideous in the dim light. The fat, caterpillar body was 4 feet long and was melded with her ragged neck.
There were no crosses on the pet door,
she said with a giggle.
Gotta be one on every entryway.
Chris fired 2 rounds at the Maryland thing. Both hit the caterpillar body, knocking it onto its side and against the door. She wriggled herself upright, giggled, and scurried behind a small couch sitting in the corner.
"Creepy crawly,"
she said from the shadows under the couch. Chris did the math concerning his ammo. His Glock held 15 rounds. He'd fired 8 so far since this madness began. That left 7 to survive the next 6 hours. He was going to have to get creative. He could lock himself in the bathroom, draw a cross above the door. As he considered this option, the Maryland thing said,
"Creepy crawly,"
and shot out from under the couch, its legs making little skittering noises. She positioned herself between him and the bathroom, blocking his way. He raised his gun and fired. The shot hit her forehead, just under her crown of dead daisies, snapping her head back. She locked her wild eyes onto his. The bullet hole in her forehead oozed. The legs, too many to count, began tippy-tapping on the wood floor. She scrunched up her face.
"I'm gonna make you dead like us."
"The hell you will," Chris said, his mind racing for a solution. Suddenly, Chris heard the unmistakable rattle of the pet door. He shot a glance and saw Frankie squirm through. Bob quickly followed. They stood and began creeping toward him. Chris backed away from them, holding the gun out at the ready.
"Creepy crawly,"
the Maryland thing said. Suddenly, there was the distinctive roar of a Volkswagen engine. Chris thought, "Gene is in the bus and going to drive through the wall." The roar grew louder, and headlights flared through the front doors. There was a thunderous crash, and the front door exploded inward, splinters flying like daggers, glass raining down like deadly rain. He caught a flash of bright white and powder blue. It was, in fact, a VW bus that had crashed into his studio, but it was not the filthy one that belonged to these hellish hippies. It was the one that belonged to his stepsister, Alyssa Hart. It screeched to a stop, and Alyssa jumped out, carrying a pistol in one hand and a crucifix in the other. She was 50, had red hair, and was ready to fight. The studio lights flickered. Sparks popped and exploded around the demolished wall from the exposed wiring. Bob pushed himself up from the rubble.
"Now there's two," he said.
Frankie crawled out from under a section of drywall and chanted,
"Come be dead. Come be dead."
Alyssa fired 2 shots. One in Frankie, causing him to drop to his knees. The other in Bob's throat. He fell on his back, but rolled over and pushed himself up. They both hooted and began crawling toward her. The Maryland thing shot toward Alyssa and sunk its rotten teeth into her leg. Alyssa grunted in pain, bent over, and smacked it on the forehead with the crucifix. The Maryland thing hissed in pain and pulled back. There was a burn mark in the shape of a cross on her forehead, and it scuttled off toward the gaping hole in the wall and out into the night. "Behind me," Alyssa said to Chris. With the cross held out before her, she started walking toward Bob and Frankie. They hissed and growled, then turned and ran out into the night toward their bus. Chris and Alyssa followed. The lights suddenly went dark as the studio's circuit breakers tripped. Only the moon, with its spectral glow, illuminated the scene. Bob and Frankie jumped in their bus through the side doors. Gene was already in the driver's seat. Marilyn stood in front of the bus. Her head was back on her body, and her face contorted into a ghoulish smile. Chris and Alyssa stopped 10 yards away. Go on, Alyssa said, holding the cross toward the hippies. Get away from here. Marilyn gave a black-toothed giggle.
You'll regret this,
she said cryptically. Then she turned and danced and twirled to the open passenger door and crawled inside. Jean swung the bus around and headed back down the driveway. Chris and Alyssa were able to see the art on the passenger side for the first time. The lyrics from that old John Lennon song was painted there. Due to the faded paint and the mildew, the message was transformed to read, "There's no heaven." The bus slowly drove down the ghost-sparkling gravel path and into the dark night. Chris and Alyssa stood silent, peering into the dark, listening to the engine of the bus trail away. After it was gone, Chris said, "What the hell just happened?" Alyssa brushed a strand of red hair from her ear. "I told you not to move here, Chris. This town is tainted with evil like no other." "I always thought evil was just people being bad," Chris said. "I didn't know it was..." He searched for the right word, and when he couldn't find it, he simply said, "This." Alyssa nodded. "I used to think the same thing until I moved here. But I've learned that evil is a real force, Chris, and it wants to ruin us. It constantly whispers in our ears, nudging us to do bad things. But sometimes, as you've seen here tonight, it comes straight at us." Chris didn't need long to digest what Alyssa said. He had a flexible mind. "So, the cross, that really works against evil?" "Yes," Alyssa replied, "it does." Chris considered what his sister said. "So, the hippies, what were they?" "I'm not quite sure," Alyssa said. "They weren't zombies. Not sure they were ghosts. But what I do know is that back in the 60s, a bunch of hippies tried to start a commune in the forest just down the road from here. A week later, some of them were found by some hunters. They'd been slaughtered. There were 5 that were never accounted for, and I believe these were the missing 5. Chris nodded. "Okay. I have to accept this or go mad. But how did you know that I was in trouble?" "I didn't," Alyssa said. "I had to work late, and I know you're a night owl. I thought I'd come by and see the new place. Seems like I got here at the perfect time." They turned and examined the damage to the studio. "How do we explain this to the insurance company?" Chris said. "We'll think of something," Alyssa replied. They inspected the bus and saw that the front was a dented mess. One headlight was broken and the windshield was covered in a web of cracks. The front doors would not open, so Alyssa got in through the side doors. She slid behind the wheel and turned the key. To her surprise, the engine purred. "Get in," she said. "Where are we going at this hour?" Chris asked. "I'm going to take you for some waffles," Alyssa replied, "and introduce you to some of my friends. We've got a lot to tell you about Nevermore Hollows." Chris knew there was nothing he could do about the gaping hole in his wall until morning, so he climbed in and buckled up in the passenger seat. The dark truth of Nevermore Hollows was creepy as hell and deadly, but he realized that it would be an amazing source of inspiration for his art. "So," he said, "where are we going to get waffles from at this hour?" Alyssa glanced at him, the green glow of the dash lights washing over her. "Winona's Waffle Hut," she said. "And if you think what happened at your place was strange, You ain't seen nothing yet.